Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week's program is about the sovereignty of God in the upcoming midterm elections. Given all that we're hearing in the news about the upcoming election, how the candidates and the pundits are all boasting about how they're going to determine the outcome. The pollsters in the 21st century are the prophets and the diviners today. Christians need to turn to the scriptures and be reminded of God's opinion on this matter. People need to be put back in their place. Even as King Nebuchadnezzar had to be put back in his place, he boasted that his reign and his kingdom were by his own doing. But God said to Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 4, verse 17, "The Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whom he wishes and sets it over the lowliest of men." You say, "I already know these things." And Pastor Brad, you've spoken about this subject often. Well, there are always new listeners to this program, and we need to hear these truths again and again. We will learn something new each time. So I want to begin with one biblically obvious statement, a statement that many would object to. And it's this: God chooses who will be in office. But don't we vote? Don't we decide? Yes, we vote, but God chooses who will be in office. Jesus Christ is the ruling king, and he decides who will rule in all human government, from the president down to the members of the local school board. Even the town dog catcher is decided by God. And God is not waiting on whom we elect to decide who he will put into office. Now, the opposing view is that God leaves the election of our leaders up to us. The ball's in our court. We are the ones who decide who will rule, whether that be a righteous candidate or an evil candidate. But what says the scripture? Well, the classic New Testament text about human government is Romans chapter 13, verse 1. "Every person is to be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God." Now, this text is not referring to God merely ordaining the office, but the very people in those offices. And the point is this: if there are any human authorities that exist, they are ordained or established by God. So much so that in Romans 13, 2, if you oppose the civil magistrates, you're opposing God. God determines who is in office. It's not by the winsomeness of the politician or the savviness of the politician or the campaign. It's not even by the will of the majority. It may look like those things are the primary cause, but they're not. They are the secondary causes, being moved by the hand of God. God parted the Red Sea by using the secondary means of a strong east wind. Everyone looking on would say that the waters were parted by the wind. But it was God who was behind the wind. He is the primary cause. The winds of popular opinion are directed by the Lord. Now, the objection to this biblical truth is that God could not possibly establish evil government. Like Habakkuk complained in Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 13, "Your eyes are too pure to approve evil, and you cannot look on wickedness with favor." His point was, how could God raise up the Babylonian Empire? We'll look at this issue of God establishing evil rulers in a moment, but the way people have gotten around this truth of God establishing all government, Romans 13:1, is by claiming that Romans 13:1 is qualified by Romans 13:4. Romans 13:4 states that it, government established by God, is a minister of God to you for good. It's an avenger against evildoers. And so the contention is, if a government is not a minister to you for good, and it's not an avenger against evildoers, then it's not a government established by God. But that conclusion doesn't make for sound biblical exegesis. The statement in Romans chapter 13, verse 1, is the overarching truth that all government leaders are established by God, the statement that they are ministers of God to you for good doesn't limit God's sovereignty over human government. As if God has only established those few Christian governments and those few Christian leaders in the world, but all of the other governments and all of the other pagan leaders are not established by God. That certainly wasn't what Paul was teaching in Romans chapter 13. And besides, we would all have to agree that in many ways, evil rulers have been ministers of God to us for good. Their persecutions have actually helped the church. The blood of the saints is the seed of the church. And they have helped the church by the disasters that they have brought down upon the heads of ungodly citizens. And also throughout the Old Testament, the truth is reiterated constantly that God is responsible for raising up all kings, whether good or evil. Case in point, Nebuchadnezzar. He was the evil Babylonian king who invaded and wiped out Israel in 586 BC. But God reminded Nebuchadnezzar that he, God, put Nebuchadnezzar in charge. Again, Daniel chapter 4, verse 17, the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind, and he bestows it on whom he wishes and sets it over the lowliest of men. Earlier in Daniel chapter 2, when Daniel confronts King Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel reminds the king that God is in charge of who rules. It's not a function of Nebuchadnezzar's intelligence or his planning. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21, it is he, Jehovah God, who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. Daniel chapter 2, verse 37, you, O king, are the king of kings to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory. Now notice that these doctrinal truths are stated in the book of Daniel during the days when God's people were in exile, a persecuted, powerless minority living in the center of human power. It would have been easy at that time to assume that man is in charge. But God wanted his people to know that he was pulling all the strings. It was God who raised up Nebuchadnezzar to be a scourge against Israel and to discipline the Jews. Jeremiah chapter 27, verse 6. Now I have given all of these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant, and I have given him also the wild animals of the field to serve him. Certainly, if the evil king Nebuchadnezzar is called God's servant, God establishes all governmental leaders. Even as God called the wicked nation Assyria to be the rod of his anger, the rod of God's anger. Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5, woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I sent it against a godless nation, Israel, and commissioned it against the people of my fury to capture booty, to seize plunder, and to trample them down like mud in the streets. But notice the text also says, woe to Assyria. Because even though Assyria, in their evil, is being used by God to punish evildoers, God will punish them for their evil intent when he is done using them. And that's Isaiah 33:1, speaking about Assyria. Woe to you, O destroyer. As soon as you finish destroying, you will be destroyed. As soon as you cease to deal treacherously, others will deal treacherously with you. Now, what is fascinating is this truth, that God uses evil to judge evil. In most cases, we see that God doesn't judge the ungodly with his own direct hand of judgment, disease, earthquakes, fire from heaven. But God lets the ungodly judge themselves by their own policies. You know, it's one thing when an ungodly citizenship is punished by the hand of God. It's a whole other message that's being sent when the ungodly are judged by the very people they put into power. by their own party, when they're judged by their own false ideology and their own immoral values. They destroy their own families. Their own policies ruin the economy, start wars, bankrupt the country, produce crime and corruption. This is Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 19. Your own wickedness will correct you, and your apostasies will reprove you. Israel, by her own policies and by her own false prophets, brought about the Babylonian invasion. Israel was destroyed by the very worldly, ungodly people and the very ungodly ideology that she was trying to emulate. If you love the ways of the devil you will have. This is what this whole Nancy Pelosi home invasion is all about. So often the media depicts these perpetrators as MAGA Republicans, only to discover later that these perpetrators are crazy leftists or ungodly libertarians. The ungodly get persecuted by the very people they create. The ungodly know this, but they quickly blame the righteous and righteous values. They say, these evil events cannot be because of our values, our ideology, our decisions. The war, the high gas prices, the inflation cannot possibly be our fault. The reason for all these things must be because of the conservatives and their antiquated values. And these things are happening because we weren't leftist enough. Well, that's Jeremiah chapter 44, verse 18. The people said, but since we stopped burning sacrifice to the Queen of Heaven, idolatry, and pouring out drink offerings to her, we have lacked everything and have met our end by the sword and by famine. So even after the destruction of Israel by Babylon, the people wouldn't admit that it was caused by their own idolatry. They claimed that the disaster was due to listening to Jehovah God, those biblical values. But the point is this: evil rulers are raised up by God to punish the very people who put them into office. The ungodly may rejoice when they win an election, but they don't realize that they have just voted in their own destruction. When the ungodly win, the godly actually are still the ones winning. Sure, an unprincipled, unbiblical president may confess that he's in office by the hand of God, but he doesn't realize he's there to be a destroyer. God gives foolish leaders to foolish people so that they will sell the store, so to speak. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 4, and I will make mere lads their princes, and capricious children will rule over them, and the people will be oppressed, each one by another, and each one by his neighbor. And God says in Zechariah chapter 11, verse 16, for behold, I am going to raise up a shepherd in the land who will not care for the perishing, seek the scattered, heal the broken, or sustain the one standing. We may imagine that the choice of our civic leaders is all about how we vote. But what swings the mood in the country? What is behind the news media pushing a certain candidate, suppressing certain news? What causes certain world events like wars and economic downturns to happen at certain times? And what directs the fear and the greed of the people at any given moment? Well, it's the invisible hand of God that moves into power those civic leaders who will do the will of God at any particular time in history, whether that be to curse or to bless. This doctrine of God's sovereignty over the nations, the prophet Jeremiah had to teach his people in a time when there was war and political turmoil. Jeremiah chapter 18, verse 5, then the word of the Lord came to me saying, can I not, O house of Israel, deal with you as this potter does, declares the Lord. Behold, like the clay in the potter's hand, so you are in my hand, O house of Israel. At one moment, I might speak concerning a nation or concerning a kingdom to uproot, to pull down or to destroy it. If that nation against which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent concerning the calamity I plan to bring on it. Or at another moment, I might speak concerning a nation or concerning the kingdom to build up or to plant it. If it does evil in my sight, by not obeying my voice, then I will think better of the good with which I have promised to bless it. So the point Jeremiah was making is that God is sovereign over the success or defeat of a nation. Therefore, the key to national success is not foreign policy or organization or election strategy or party dynamics or fundraising. The key is obedience to God in both worship and moral law. That's the whole point in this doctrine of God's sovereignty over governmental authorities. Knowing these things is not simply to be an exercise in being doctrinally correct concerning God's sovereignty over human activity. It's to remind us that if everything depends upon God, we need to be rightly related to Him. If we're to receive the blessing of His providence rather than the curse. So how does this work? How does God's hand move in history? Let me share three verses. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 1. The plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Now, this is not limited to our speech. The point is that people may plan, but the outcomes are determined by God. As in the book of James, chapter 4, come now you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city and spend a year and engage in business and make a profit. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, in your presumption. All such boasting is evil. Well, because of Proverbs chapter 16, verse 1, regardless of what you do, God determines outcomes. Another verse to consider is Proverbs 21, verse 1. The king's heart is like channels of water in the hands of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. Now, to continue this analogy, if you were to direct the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea rather than to the Dead Sea, you wouldn't build a canal at the bottom of the Jordan River. You would go upstream to the higher altitude. Well, in the same way, consider that God orchestrates events by developing attitudes in people and creating events years before decisions are made. But would God turn the heart of a king to do evil? And that brings us to a third verse to consider. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11. For this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth but took pleasure in wickedness. This verse is about the people of the world embracing the future Antichrist. For God to send a deluding influence doesn't mean God is creating new evil in these people. What appears to be happening is that God is removing from these people their natural, God-given common sense and survival instincts. I mean, given the history of the world, smart people would realize globalism will end in a disaster, like the empires of the past. But in the end times, everyone will believe globalism is going to be the solution to world problems. Smart people wouldn't tear down their borders. They wouldn't destroy their energy industry. They wouldn't bankrupt their economies by printing money. But the intellectuals are now deluded into believing nationalism is not necessary, that CO2 is a pollutant, and that deficit spending is progress. God allows a deluding influence to blind these people to common sense. Now, that deluding influence may be the doctrine of demons or the very teaching of the Antichrist, but God is allowing and sending that deluding influence. So here's a question. What do you see happening in this election that is the hand of God? You know, I think about John Fetterman running for the Senate seat in PA. In May of this year, he experienced a stroke that incapacitated him. Might cost him the election. Well, who's behind that? God. Now, Fetterman may still win, but then the purpose would be to show that no matter what, the people of Pennsylvania still want a socialist and an abortionist. This week, there was a big upset in Brazil. The conservative president was voted out of office and replaced by a far leftist who had been in jail on corruption charges. Why did he lose? Well, the economy in Brazil was going downhill like all other economies. And so the people voted their pocketbook. The leftist candidate promised to raise minimum wage and to jumpstart the economy. And although it looks as if circumstances determined the outcome of the election, it was the hand of God working those circumstances. It was the hand of God giving the people what they valued: money over morality. Now, the conservative president is refusing to concede, claiming election fraud. And this will reflect on and provide examples for what happened in the United States in 2020. Now, concerning Providence, have you seen all of the political ads for the Democrats? The Democrats are positioning themselves as being pro-abortionists. And this is a new phenomenon because it used to be that the Democrats would keep silent on their pro-abortion position because they wanted to appeal to those who tended toward pro-life. But now the Democrats have been emboldened and are shouting their abortions. And they're calling pro-life candidates radicals, extremists, dangerous, anti-freedom, because these Democrats are basing their ethics on what produces the most moral freedom for man, rather than basing their ethics on the Word of God. So I wonder what the Hispanic community, which tends to be anti-abortion, is now learning about the Democrats. You know, we assume that God's goal is to defeat the ungodly, but God's goal is first to expose sin before he judges the sinner. So what other signs do you see of God's providence in this election? Write what you're seeing in the comment section below. Now, just to be complete here, I need to mention a few more key texts about God establishing civil government, just some texts to remove all doubt. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 14. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. Power is mine. By me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, all who judge rightly. Notice again that people, in their earthly view of things, will assume civil government comes about by their own doing. But God has to inform them otherwise. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 30, there is no wisdom and no understanding, no counsel against the Lord. That doesn't mean men cannot do evil, but they cannot thwart the hand of God in allowing evil to judge evil. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 21, many plans are in man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord will stand. Isaiah chapter 14, verse 27, for the Lord of hosts has planned, and who can frustrate it? As for his outstretched hand, who can turn it back? Isaiah 46, 10, my purposes will be established and I will accomplish all my good pleasure. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man of my purpose from a far country. Truly I have spoken, truly I will bring it to pass. I have planned it, surely I will do it. The bird of prey from the east refers to the Assyrian nation and the king that God has raised up to judge Israel. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 9. Be broken, O people, be shattered, and give ear, all remote places of the earth. Gird yourselves, yet be broken or shattered. Gird yourselves, yet be shattered. Devise a plan, but it will be thwarted. State a proposal, but it will not stand, for God is with us. The point here is that even though Israel prepares to win a battle, God will thwart their plan because he decreed their defeat, regardless of what the nation does to try to prevent it. Psalm 75 is all about the works of God. Verse 6, Nor from the east, nor from the west, nor from the desert comes exaltation. But God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another. But notice the next point. Since God is the one who sets up civic leaders, people must submit to these civic leaders, to God's decree. Verse 8, for the cup is in the hand of the Lord, and the wine foams, it's well mixed, and he pours out of this. Surely all the wicked of the earth must drain and drink down its dregs. The point is, we must drink the cup of the governing authorities that God establishes. People can get very frustrated with foolish, unjust leadership. But this is the hand of God, the hand of his discipline that people must receive. Even as God told the Israelites, they must accept the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar. In John Calvin's treatise on civil government, he has multiple chapters on what to do when evil rules. In section 25, Calvin writes, an ungodly king is a mark of the Lord's anger. Robbers who plunder your goods, adulterers who defile your bed, and assassins who aim at your life, all such calamities are classified in Scripture among the curses of God. But men fail to realize that individuals of the worst character and ones most unworthy of honor, if invested with public authority, receive that divine authority which the Lord, by his word, placed on the ministers of his justice and judgment, and that accordingly, insofar as public obedience is concerned, he is to be held in the same honor and reverence as the best of kings. Then in section 29, Calvin goes on to write, if we have an ungodly or profane king, let us first call up the remembrance of our own faults, which doubtless the Lord is chastening by such scourging, by giving us such kings. In this way, humility will curb our impatience. And let us reflect that it belongs not to us to cure these evils, and that all that remains for us is to implore the help of the Lord, in whose hand are the hearts of kings and the inclination of kingdoms. God takes his stand in the congregation of the mighty. He judges among the rulers, Psalm 82. Before his face shall fall and be crushed all kings and judges of the earth who have not bowed to the Messiah, who have enacted unjust laws. Unquote, John Calvin. Well, this is Psalm 50, where the people must drink the cup of the Lord, the civic leaders God establishes. Now, in Calvin's day, the people certainly didn't vote for their king. So Calvin wrote, it doesn't belong to us to cure these evils. But in our day, since we vote, we do have a responsibility in curing these evils. But even then, it's very limited. Let's not think that because we live in a democracy, anything has changed in regard to God's sovereignty in God choosing our leaders. So the question that always comes up when this doctrine is discussed is, why vote? If God is sovereign and he establishes earthly authorities, why then bother to cast a ballot? Let God take care of it. Well, the same issue arises in every area of God's sovereignty. If God ordains who we're to marry, why date? If God added daily to the church those who are being saved, Acts chapter 2, why do the work of evangelism? Because the sovereignty of God doesn't relieve us of human responsibility. Just like we read in the Westminster Confession of Faith, God from all eternity did, by the most wise and holy counsel of his own will, freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass. Well, with a statement like that, people wrongly assume that means God forces people to do what he wants them to do, or that everything that happens is a matter of determinism or fatalism. But the Westminster Confession goes on to state what the Bible teaches about God's sovereignty. Yet so, as thereby neither is God the author of sin, nor is violence offered to the will of the creatures, nor is the liberty or contingency of second causes taken away, but rather established. In other words, God, in his sovereign will, uses the will of people to accomplish his plan. And God will cause all things, even evil, to work together for the good of his people. But of course, on our part, we need to act and we need to be on the side of goodness. God can work with us or apart from us, but if we're on his side in righteousness, we receive the blessing. We're not electing a candidate as much as we are showing God our values and our faithfulness to our stewardship. I mean, in the United States, the power of government is invested in the people. To not vote would be like a business owner who does an interview and check out the people he wants to hire. To not vote would be like a lazy king who doesn't bother to make good laws or repeal bad laws. In the United States, we are the government. We are vested with all sorts of responsibilities that the early Christians in the Roman Empire didn't have. I mean, this is a great privilege, but it's also a great responsibility. And we'll be held accountable if we don't vote or if we vote wrongly. I mean, just like a senator will be held accountable for how he votes on the floor of the Senate. You say, well, I'm not political. I don't know anything about public ethics. I don't know who to vote for. Well, you better find out. Could you imagine a congressman who says, you know, I'm not political. I don't know how to vote. He would be derelict to his duties. Now, certainly the biblical prophecy is that evil will break out at the end of the church age, that the world will embrace the Antichrist, that the Antichrist will be sent by God to judge the world. But God would have his people leave the testimony of a righteous vote, regardless of the outcome of the election. As I said, I'm more concerned with being faithful to my stewardship as a Christian citizen than I'm concerned with the outcome of the election. You know, I hear people all the time who say that they don't vote once they discover that the good candidate doesn't have a chance of winning. Well, that's a complete misunderstanding of why we vote. If Caesar asks us to vote to put a candidate into public office, we better show up to vote for the right candidate. We need to leave a testimony regardless of whether we get 5% of the vote or 10% or 51% of the vote. It's not about winning an election. It's about being faithful. And that applies to many areas of the Christian life. Do we stop preaching the gospel because people refuse to hear? Do we disregard the Great Commission unless we're sure that a certain amount of people will be saved? Of course not. Regardless of the decrees of God that are hidden from us, we must obey the word of God and fulfill our God-given responsibilities to uphold righteousness. So this truth of God's sovereignty over election results, God's sovereignty in establishing governing authorities, is a basic truth, but it's one that we must learn and constantly relearn. This is a truth you're not going to hear about in the news. You know, just like King Nebuchadnezzar, the politicians and the media believe everything is determined by them. However, God has something different to say about the matter, which should be an encouragement to God's people that men are not in charge of outcomes, no matter how popular or powerful they might be. Well, thanks for listening. We who are God's ambassadors, you know, need to hear these Bible studies and not just be listening to the news media. So subscribe, share, like, leave a comment below. I've been asked to do another question and answer program. I haven't done one for at least 5 years. So send any questions you might have to my email, godandcountryradio@verizon.net, or include them in the comments below. And in a few weeks, I'll be answering those questions in an upcoming program. May God richly bless you as you stand for the truth. May Jesus Christ reign.